Hello everyone and welcome to Crib Chat, your weekly podcast on everything disability. Today, it's a privilege to have Disability World Commissioner, Alistair McEwan, with us. How are you doing, Alistair?
Thank you, EB. Thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure's all ours. Please tell us a bit about yourself and what role do you play?
Thank you firstly for this opportunity, EB. And by way of background, I've been working in the disability community and the sector for over 25 years, almost 30 years. And I've just completed with five other commissioners, the Disability World Commission. Prior to that, I was the Australian Disability Discrimination Commissioner for 3 years before I then moved immediately to the Disability Royal Commission. And I have a background in law and art and a strong background in working with not-for-profit and the core government and the public sector.
Pleasure to have you on the show. What key insights from the Disability Royal Commission most resonated with you?
That's a really good question, Ibi, and it's one that I've thought about a lot during the Royal Commission and since finishing the Royal Commission at the end of September this year. I think for me, some of the really significant things are, firstly, when you look at the final report, there is a lot, I think, for disabled people that we've said again and again and again. So I think this is really important that we need to just simply say, this is not working, how do we fix it, and here are the solutions. The other insight for me and something that was really powerful was listening very carefully to the thousands of people who interacted or engaged with us and making sure we gave each person or each individual who engaged with us the time and space for them to be able to tell us their experiences and what they wanted to share with us. And so it's very important for me as a commissioner to give people that space and the opportunity. The final insight, and something that has really resonated with me, particularly since finishing, is we've still got a long way to go. And as you can see from the final report, there were different views on what human rights might look like for disabled people, or rather should look like for disabled people. And it was disappointing that all commissioners could not agree on a vision for disabled people in Australia. And I think for me, what's really important is that we, as the disability community, continue to build on the excellent advocacy that we've done over the years.
Such amazing work that you're doing. So, Commissioner, why was the role and access to the disability support pension excluded from the DRC's findings?
That's a really important issue and a really important question. And for us, and I'll make it very clear, this is my personal view as well as the view of some of the other commissioners. We didn't seek to exclude or to ignore things like the disability support pension. What we tried to do with the terms of reference is to examine the causes and the drivers of why disabled people are experiencing violence, abuse, neglect, and exploitation. So for me and a couple of other commissioners, it was really important to address the very things that are happening out there in society that exclude and indeed segregate people from society. So a welfare approach, not necessarily one that we saw as the solution per se. It was more looking at why disabled people are being excluded. And so of course, we did examine social support in the framework of how can this be improved or what needs to happen to make sure that disabled people have the right support. That said, what was really important for us was to challenge the long-held stigma and prejudice that mainstream society has against disabled people.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that, Alistair. So why don't they recommend an increase in public housing as a disabled people more likely to be homeless because of the social security and discrimination.
You're absolutely right, EB. We know, and we reported on this in the final report, that disabled people are at a high risk of needing public housing or at a high risk of homelessness. What we sought to, again, was to recommend a thing that would make the government address disabled people as a priority within the broader issue of inclusion. And for that, we recommended that disabled people be a priority group in the framework, such as the homelessness framework and other frameworks that we have here in Australia. So again, the solution is not necessarily an increase in supply of housing or public housing. The solution is to break down the barriers more broadly as to why disabled people are at risk of homelessness. Why are they at risk of having to move into public housing and not, for example, out there in the community learning and living and engaging and interacting and socialising with other people in the community? So for me personally, an increase in supply of public housing would not necessarily address the long-term goal of making Australia more inclusive. I should emphasise we did very much recognise that disabled people should be a priority group for when we look at that broader framework of fixing the problems around housing and other areas.
Alastair, is there anything done to address the issue of public housing? What's being done?
Well, as I understand it, there's the homelessness and the housing and the framework and the national strategy. Perhaps we might talk a bit more in a minute about our recommendations around homes and living for disabled people. So again, the increasing the supply of public housing, for me personally, the Royal Commission was an opportunity to move away from this image, or the non-disabled people think that disabled people should be on welfare, that they should all be in public housing, that they should all get social security, DSP, etc., etc. For me, the Royal Commission was an opportunity to say to mainstream, you are failing to make your mainstream setting inclusive. So I guess that's a kind of a roundabout way to saying what should be happening more in terms of public housing. Again, removing the barrier to why disabled people need to go into public housing in the first place.
Yeah. Now, thank you for that, Alastair. How much influence of DSA policy development hearings, recommendations and research was exercised by staff with disability?
This is a really sensitive question, and I'm happy to answer it because I think it's important that your listeners and viewers have a bit of an understanding as to how we approach the work. Well, firstly, I should preface this by saying we never really got to more than 20% of the total staff members being disabled people. I think on average it hovered around about 12 to 15%. I think at one point maybe 18 to 20% only for a very brief time. So by saying that, you can see that there are very low numbers of disabled people in the workforce of the Royal Commission. And that in itself, I believe, was a problem. It meant that our voice was not as loud or as great as the other staff. It was certainly a very difficult culture to work in, particularly driven by overly bureaucratic approaches that didn't allow for the creativity and innovation that disabled people bring to the workplace. And also, it's fair to say that the Royal Commission was probably a microcosm of what's reflective in workplaces around Australia, if disabled people can actually get into those workplaces. Our voices are often stifled, we're thought of afterward, we are not included in planning, and we're not included in the broader workplace activity. So to bring my answer specifically to how much influence, not a great deal. And I should also say that the hearing program was mainly determined by the chair of the Royal Commission and the Senior Council. other commissioners, whilst we were offered and asked to provide feedback over the years, in my view, the hearing program was not structured in the way that I think should have been representative of the work we were trying to do. Finally, my final point is the disabled staff we had were fantastic. They were driven by the desire to see change. They were driven by the desire to see the terms of reference implemented or as carried out as they should with the human rights framework. And finally, the staff that we had there produced some really great high-quality material.
Thank you for sharing, and apologies. I didn't mean to be sensitive about this, so thank you very much, Alistair.
Can you please explain why commissioners were disciplined on recommendations to end segregation in the areas of education, employment, and housing?
Jonathan, this is a huge question and one that occupied myself and Wanda Galbally, the other disabled commissioner, for the entire lifetime of the 4.5 years of the Royal Commission. I want to start by saying this is my personal view on why there might have been, there was a split, and as we saw in the final report, there were different views. I think, firstly, the lived experience of a particular topic, and in this case, being disabled, when you bring your lived experience to policy development and to the work of the Royal Commission, I have to say, without beating my own drum, it's a very powerful thing to have. When you know what it's like to be excluded, segregated, discriminated against, made to feel other, made to feel different, the list goes on, Jonathan. So that was one reason why I think it was so difficult for some other commissioners to imagine what life might be like for a disabled person today in Australia. I was disappointed, and I know Rhonda was disappointed, that we couldn't come, the six of us could not come to a unanimous agreement on the very simple premise of a fully inclusive society for disabled people. So that's where the split began. Three commissioners, Rhonda, myself and Barbara Bennett, had a vision into the future that mainstream society will become fully inclusive and phase out and end segregation. And for as long as you have segregated settings, you will never achieve inclusion. And what was also striking was that some commissioners, or two commissioners in particular, thought that inclusion includes segregation. And I guess for me, that was baffling. However, going forward, the three commissioners, Barbara Bennett, Rhonda Galbally, myself, have set out a very clear plan for education, employment and housing. Now, I know many in the disabled community think these timeframes are long, and in one way they are. We hope that it will give people a blueprint to be able to move and start addressing the very real issue of segregation. And finally, I think another reason as to why there was a split is it can be challenging sometimes for non-disabled people to imagine or to understand what human rights might look like in practice. So, for example, today I'm communicating with you through some captioned as well as an old-band interpreter, and you're using your own devices to achieve your human rights to communication access. So the outcome is still the same. However, I think for many non-disabled people, imagining what human rights look like in practice can be quite challenging.
Yeah, fair enough. So, Alistair, how will the recommendations help those of us with psychosocial disabilities and mental conditions?
We heard a lot about the issue that people with psychosocial disability and people with mental health conditions have, and that was a very common theme. among a lot of the work that we did. So again, keeping in mind that our aim was to examine where the failures of mainstream settings are, we were very conscious of things like the individual and having the right support, individuals being able to articulate what they need when they are going out and about, or what they need in terms of housing or employment. Employment was a big one, and we heard a lot, particularly in private sessions that I did, about people with psychosocial disabilities and mental health issues feeling they could not even disclose their disability in the workplace. So again, that's a very common theme. So the recommendation that we've provided, I hope, not only are they broad-based, but they also captured the really important need to be tailoring solutions as we go. Of course, there's always universal design, which we should keep in mind when we are obviously designing mainstream settings or fixing mainstream settings. However, a recurring theme that I heard was people with psychosocial disabilities and mental health conditions wanting the respect and acknowledgement that they can thrive in society, however, they need also the right support.
That's an interesting point, yeah, you've raised that, Alistair. Alistair, how much influence are providers, particularly the Big Six, having regularly co-designed that clearly only benefits them, not the actual participants?
Oh, Ibi, we heard a lot in the Royal Commission about the power dynamic between the service providers and the individuals, particularly in group homes, sheltered workshops, day programs, and so forth. And so what we are seeing, again, is this recurring theme of service providers not actualizing human rights, not having a culture of human rights. And also, we heard again and again of disabled people being excluded from the planning process, from the ability to provide their feedback. If they made complaints, they were dismissed easily. The very long list, again, of the power imbalance that we heard a lot about. So I think what we need to do is, and as we recommended, are a number of things. And, of course, they range across things like governance. So a board should have a better understanding of human rights. They should have disabled people on them, not just one as a token, but a significant number to make it a productive and effective decision-making body. And, of course, staff. We heard that, and as I described earlier, low numbers of disabled people working in these organisations. And, of course, the co-design approach. Again, people with disabilities not being given the right support, including communication access, to be able to participate. So it's a huge issue, and I'm hoping that with the NDIS review report that's come out this week, that, and we may talk about that shortly, I'm hoping that together these are two very powerful documents to say, look, people with disabilities have to be at the forefront of everything.
Thank you for sharing, Alistair. What was going through your mind when Australian Disability Strategy and the NDIS review was announced? And did the strategy broaden your approach to the final report?
It did. And firstly, before I began with the Disability Royal Commission, I was part of the consultations that were going on the last Disability Strategy, what was previously known as the National Disability Strategy. And the department was just starting to review and seek feedback. And the one very big feedback was the lack of coordination, the lack of detail, and the lack of commitment behind the report. The strategy itself is framed quite well in human rights, still doesn't go quite far enough. However, it was framed and it captured all the life areas quite well. However, it was just simply was not meeting the objective. And so the Disability Royal Commission heard a lot about that as well. So again, our recommendations have been focused around saying the ADS, the new Australian Disability Strategy, must improve by aligning our recommendations and findings in the next year or two. It really puts on the state and territory. They have to improve their own game when it comes to disability inclusion. And of course, the NDIS review report has demonstrated that we need an ecosystem, a disability ecosystem, and foundational support to go across all areas, not just the NDIS. And so finally, the Australian Disability Strategy was very much in front of mind when we did our final report. And I think our recommendations are very powerful when they look at refining and reviewing and improving the strategy.
Thank you for that, Alistair. So what was going through your mind when recommending such substantial reform as the information of our Department of Disability Equality and Minister for Disability Inclusion to have tangible outcomes?
It'd be in the Disability Royal Commission, we heard a lot about the disjointed, the siloed approach that the government, all governments, Commonwealth, state and territory, industry, the not-for-profit, the whole of community seem to take often or significantly a siloed approach to disability. So disability is always seen as an afterthought or they're an add-on. There are no strategies that go across all life areas. Now, of course, the Australian Disability Strategy is supposed to address that, and as we have found, it's not quite doing that. So we recommended a number of things, and that was the issue of disability, from a political point of view, become a senior cabinet minister, not a junior minister, not a parliamentary secretary, not also from a bureaucratic point of view, not an add-on or a program within a broader department, particularly DSS, which has a welfare approach, as we all know. So for us, it's really important. If disability is ever going to be seen as equal with everything else, it needs senior leadership in the government. And we also thought it was important to recommend a National Disability Commission that will oversee all of those things that I've just described. Implementation of the Australian Disability Strategy, the strategy to bring disability across everything, and ultimately, of course, disabled people to be at the forefront of all this through the formation of advisory councils and so forth.
Thank you for that. Can you please reflect on the voices of people with disabilities involved in the criminal justice and domestic violence system, and also your hopes for greater presentation and diversionary programs?
A really important question. And what we heard in the Royal Commission in terms of criminal justice is the need for more diversionary and prevention programs, particularly in terms of interaction with the police. We found, and of course this is something I've known about for many years prior to my time with the Royal Commission, is that when you get people with disabilities interacting with the police, and if those interactions are negative and the police assume that you are a criminal, you then are on a lifetime almost of being in the criminal justice system. So our recommendation around those issues were to work strongly with the community and with other programs to ensure that disabled people are not enmeshed in a lifetime of criminal justice. The work that we did in domestic violence and family violence was also really important. And again, we heard of the importance of disabled people experiencing violence and experiencing domestic or family violence to get the right support at the very early stages of their experience so that they, again, don't become enmeshed in a system that is not supportive. The voices that we heard in the Royal Commission were very clear also on the need for better interaction between the NDIS and the criminal justice system, as well as the interaction between the criminal justice system and when people are exiting the criminal justice system into the community, including community support programs.
Interesting. On a final note, is there anything that you would like to share with our audience? our final thoughts for the audience.
Firstly, thank you both, AB and Jonathan. This has been a wonderful opportunity to share some thoughts. Secondly, it was a great privilege. It was a true privilege to serve the Australian community and in particular the disability community through this Royal Commission in terms of taking a forensic and very detailed look at the drivers and the causes of why disabled people are experiencing violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation every day. Finally, I hope that the report, in particular Volume 7, which talked about the issues around education, employment and homes and living, I hope this gives the disability community even more motivation to keep doing the excellent job that they've been doing for decades around advocacy, being focused, being united. And I would like to see this final report become a rallying call for the disability community to use in our ongoing fight for human rights.
Thank you very much, Alistair. It's such an honour to have the Disability Commissioner join us on the podcast. Keep doing what you do best and keep us updated with the findings and whatnot.
Ibi, just on that note, you may be aware that we've asked, the Royal Commission had asked the government to respond to all the recommendations by the 31st of March. So I encourage you and everyone to keep a very close eye on the government at the end of March. We hope to see something come out by then.
You've been watching Group Chat, your weekly podcast on everything disability. Join us next week as we talk about more things disability. Goodbye for now.